The Shaggy Jenkins Show.
We have to make Russia great again.
On the Pacifica Radio Network.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network. Welcome to it. Holy cow, have we had a busy, busy week. And it's only going to get busier as we're island hopping. But besides being on the run, we're going to run right through some stories today that have everything to do with who's really in charge of government and what real impact those people have. Who is we? Well, first, there's me, your host, critical thinker, problem solver, guy just left of normal insane, right around the corner from logical, but always found at my website, shaggyjenkins.com, or at Shaggy Live, wherever fine social media is served. This guy can be found all over the airwaves in Chicago and pretty much the nation. Please welcome Information Headquarters himself, Chris Bass.
You have overcome, for I am here. Shaggy, what exactly is island hopping? What is that, sir?
Because the state of Hawaii is actually broken up into separate islands, the only way that we can travel between cities is to island hop or jump on these little Cessna airplanes and go island to island or, you know.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this weekend, since I'm going between the Isle of Oahu, the gathering place, and Maui, the Valley Isle, I have to island hop back and forth, and it's not as fun as it sounds.
Oh, man. What's the average of people island hopping? I know that's commonplace, I assume, but say for example, on one of those planes you mentioned, how many people on the plane, you know, including yourself? That seems to be kind of tedious almost.
Well, yeah, but it's always a full flight, too, and you only have about four per day going inter-island, so you got to jump on quick. But yeah, we usually island hop on the weekend. We used to have boats and ferries, but then, you know, whales. So.
Yeah, that'll put a damper on things, right?
You know, it makes it a little hard. And that's the funny thing is like anytime we talk about stuff around the United States, people forget that one of those United States, we can't even see each other's county lines because they're separated by ocean. And it makes things weird.
Oh. Very much so. Yeah.
Well, besides talking about the crippling infrastructure of, well, tourism on Maui and Oahu, I thought I would instead bring up today one of the weirdest stories ever. Okay, it's the purge, not purge, of the Department of Homeland Security and Secret Service. And Donald Trump seems to think that he's running in a political race against the Secret Service because, once again, Chris, we're back to the cutesy nicknames, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, this is to be expected from this administration. You know, I don't think it's as shocking at all as it used to be. I think we just sit back and say, okay, that's how 45 operates.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing is about his operating style is he never really looks into the ramifications of things that he does. Just in, does it serve his purposes? And this week, as long as we're talking about news in review, not just the head of the Secret Service that was very unceremoniously dumped on his keister, I think it was Tuesday? Yeah, Tuesday. Uh-huh. But the thing is about this whole story is, once again, we have Donald Trump doing the exact same thing he says he's not doing. And to keep us all distracted, we're back to the nickname. This time it's Dumbo. Okay.
Yeah. If you're going to promote the movie that's out currently, my sister and nephew went to go see it a few weeks ago, and they loved it. And so, you know, that's great. But you talk about using it as a name to describe somebody coming into a high office position. Randolph texts Alice, you know, to come in and call him that. Okay, if you two were growing up, you know, you're boys and teenagers together, you call him that affectionately, okay, that's different. But to name call, just for name calling's sake, doesn't make any sense. And again, I strive from where I am, whatever platform I'm going to use, this is not good behavior, unbecoming of a president. And he has to realize that. He'll never realize, I don't think he will, no matter how many people try to tell him to the side. Say there was somebody that was like, Mr. President, I wouldn't use language like that. He'll still ignore him or her because he thinks he's correct.
Yeah, that's true. And the thing is, too, it's like when it comes up with these nicknames, it's kind of ironic in this case because Donald Trump is trying to say something is not happening, much like in the original classic from Walt Disney where they said, I believe that when I see an elephant fly. And boy, is Trump trying to get that big ass animal into the sky. This is the thing. Besides aviation pachydermy, this is kind of one of those cases of, once again, somebody not exactly going along with Trump's agenda, and then all of a sudden finding themselves the bullseye of his public ire. Look, with this modus of operandi that Trump has, can we say that now he's kind of started to turn his eye towards wanting to dismantle the Secret Service and intelligence community around the president?
Well, see, that would make sense because look at it from his perspective, from an orange lens, that you have been against the Intelligence Committee since day one. You've always shown, first you say we all got to work together. Once again, this is the honeymoon stages of when he became president-elect into President Trump. Everything's copacetic, kumbaya, you know, we all work together. But then after the honeymoon's over with, now we get into what really is the marriage is about. And the marriage is about him and him alone. So when you go against the Intelligence Committee from day one, the bullet point always used, the staple point was go back to Helsinki when he discredited all of the intel that was given to him and sided with the enemy and President Vladimir Putin. That should have been a red flag right there. And for him to always denounce or denounce anything came his way by the intelligence community should be cause for concern. Now, I've had situations where I've read reports, it seemed like anybody else on the news, where you have presidents who disagreed at times with the intelligence community, FBI, CIA, and the like, but never to the point of this extreme. This, Shaggy, is extremism. So it would make sense to discredit from the beginning and dismantle. From his warped mind, it makes all the sense in the world.
It kind of does, because this is the thing. Donald Trump has not shown a lot of, dare we say, je ne sais quoi about the office of the president, nor the executive branch in general. One of the things that kind of makes this story particularly interesting, though, is that the Secret Service is one of those agencies that was kind of involved with all of this stuff that we talked about. Helsinki, meeting Putin off the record. You know, everywhere the president doesn't want them to know that he's done things. Well, now he's getting rid of the head of the agency responsible for staying around him all the time. It kind of, and I mean, this might be conspiratorial in me, Chris, and you can be the one to either pull me back from wearing the tinfoil hat or pushing me right up under the storm bunker. This kind of seems systematic. Does it to you as well?
Well, I got some Reynolds Wrap, and I'll join you in the Reynolds Wrap cap. Yes, it does. And again, people understand something. When someone has a certain agenda, and that much power that this president has, it's going to be executed if not stopped. And that's where, of course, the House comes in and the Senate comes in that situation. If you're able to put a kibosh on what he's doing, when you make these little tiny inroads to create a narrative that the intel that we have is not in place, is gonna, look, here's my point, just go overcome my other point. There's already, it must be infighting already in the intel. It has to be. That's just natural, you know, reaction to human beings. So what better way to do is to divide and conquer.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm saying it will work, but it doesn't bode well for citizens. For him to play these games, that would not benefit us in the long run.
No. And when it comes to playing these games, this week we've seen a White House that is playing a little game of who done it or who done it first or who's actually doing it. And I bring that up because there was a very interesting story that developed, okay? So let's back up a couple of days, shall we? Back to the sunny, beautiful weekend. The last weekend. While we were there in the last weekend, everybody got a Sunday surprise with Kirstjen Nielsen being ejected as the leader of the Department of Homeland Security. Follow that on Monday with the bombshell about the Secret Service director being ousted, and then on Tuesday with the deputy director of the Department of Homeland Security, thus clearing the way for the guy that's in charge of the border and protections guy. Yeah, he gets to take over the Department of Homeland Security as an acting director. Once again, we're back to the actors. But with all of that said and done, as the week goes on, we've seen kind of this slow unraveling of power. And a lot of people kind of got really suspicious Monday evening. Okay, as soon as the first two things happened, because here's the reason, Chris. For the longest time, Nielsen has been under attack by somebody within the White House cabinet, who's not the president himself, for not being tough enough on immigration, not overemphasizing the southern border crisis as much as possible, and not mobilizing more troops and authorizing firing on migrants. That person was Stephen Miller. And this week we had the very interesting question of who... Well, you know, like the old reggae song, I play it all the time on my new job, but it's by Clinton Farron. It's called Whose Game Is It? And it asks a very simple question. When you're running around playing the games of diplomacy, whose game is it really? And Chris, even though Donald Trump came out and said, it's me, I'm the one in charge of my White House, and all powerful Trump, bow before me. Even though we have that, Washington insiders are saying that all of these steps from the Secret Service to the Department of Homeland Security to the Border Protection Agency, all of these moves are at the behest and request of Stephen Miller. So, Chris, this week, whose game is it? Trump's or Miller's?
Well, I got to go with Miller's. And only because of the fact that the brief history has shown us that Trump goes for outside resources to galvanize his point. It goes back to Fox News Channel. It goes back to Laura Ingraham. It goes back to Sean Hannity, the Trump whisperer. It goes back to Ann Coulter. All these media right-wing people, Rush Limbaugh included, that he uses as resources. So it would just make sense, again, once again, following the pattern of this president, that Stephen Miller, who is his speechwriter, that he would lean on him for ideas and how to go about things because he has no original thought himself. So in order to provide that, quote, unquote, I have original thought, let me get the ear of the conservative Mount Rushmore, of Laura Ingraham, Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, and you add on Stephen Miller just for giggles.
Yeah, and I know this week has been very weird on conservative media because, yeah, Rush Limbaugh seems to think that, oh, everybody has got it wrong when it comes to Trump. And it is not Stephen Miller. And everybody thinks that and they're just looking, the liberals, they're looking for the mastermind behind the plan. But the fact of the matter is Trump isn't sophisticated to be as racist surgically as Miller. Am I wrong?
No, I think you're right. I think Trump goes with the flow of what he feels going to benefit him and others around him. He could have picked either party. Let's call it for what it is. He's running for the presidency. He could have picked either party. In fact, there's a viral video of him years ago stating the Republican Party was so stupid that he'd get involved. If I find it, I'll share it on my page on Facebook. It was something given to me about a couple of years back, but that would make sense again. You have to understand the mindset, which is not too much mine, setting in the mind of the president. I hate to say it, but it's true, because everything he reacts from is always a personal knee-jerk reaction. It's never business. It's always intertwined. So that type of mentality is very dangerous, considering the position that he's in. It's extremely dangerous.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and this is the thing. Although the president has been coming out and telling everybody that the Mueller report was a coup on the presidency and it's a power grab, it was a fake power grab that just failed, the fact of the matter is that when you think about all the moves and machinations of Trump and Miller this week, doesn't it seem like they're the ones doing the exact thing that Trump is saying the other guys do?
Trump has the ability to put his sins on other people. He projects on other people, and he pretty much is giving himself away. Let's go back to the presidency run back in 2016. He went after Hillary Clinton about the email. All that stuff about the emails and everything else come up front of mouth, find out that he was involved in the emails. So everything he puts about somebody else is usually going back to him. He's projecting his guilt, or whatever you want to call it, onto other people.
You know, when it comes to Trump's guilt, this is the thing. A lot of people assume that he has no conscience whatsoever. But there's something that a lot of people don't understand. When it comes to Donald Trump, he is a public opinion poll wrapped up in orange skin. In other words, unless it wins him some sort of public validation or approval, he does not do those things. So how is it that he keeps doing these very, very unpopular agenda items without kind of any faltering of his confidant, his confidence? And that, ladies and gentlemen, is what I want to say is Stephen Miller's role. Chris, I have a feeling that even though Trump says, it's not Miller, and Miller tries to come out and say, it's not me, slimy worm guy that I am, not me. The fact of the matter is that Miller has figured out the secret. If you let Trump believe that it was his idea first, let him take credit for the idea no matter what it is, no matter what you want to do, no matter how bad it is to do it, you can get away with it with Donald J. Trump. That is something, I'm afraid, that's held up since the Apprentice days, right?
Absolutely. I mean, here's a guy who was doing the show, The Apprentice, did not want to know the story. He only came in for the Your Fire part. And the people and producers, they try to say, look, Mr. Trump, you have to do the story. You have to be here more often and see how it's filmed and see how the format is. No. All he got off on was saying you're fired. And there were times he wasn't even, he didn't look at the script to see who got fired next. Just it was all edited very craftily. Because he never did, that's how lazy it is. So if he's just that lazy to do a TV so-called reality show, he's lazy doing this job.
Oh, yeah, yeah, and we found that whole laziness this week. I mean, you know, I didn't want to jump into this, and I probably won't, but in a bunch of hearings this week, especially with Mnuchin and Bill Barr, we learned that Donald Trump's inner circle has been kind of more probed than they want to admit. In fact, Mueller's investigators reached out to people like Hope Hicks, Corey Lewandowski, and others. And here's the weird consensus, though. When you talk about the Mueller investigation, Trump's denouncing of it, the GOP's staunch belief that this was all a political coup that was failed, all of these ideologies, and I hate to be the guy that's like, ooh, conspiracy. But when you look at all of these ingrained ideologies, they only come together and coalesce in one person between the GOP and Donald Trump. That person is Stephen Miller. What will it take for the United States to kind of realize these shadowy cabinet people in Trump's White House actually have more influence over the decisions than Trump does himself?
The only way it's going to work to get the American people to see differently is that you need corresponding Republicans to get on board to go after the president. And I don't think that'll never happen. There's too much power at stake. They infight, they go back and forth between the conservative party, Republicans, between the GOP and the Trumpsters. They go, you know, once again, constant infighting. But they know that they're in power is never going to be relinquished. It's going to have to take a radical move to say, you know what, regardless of my alliance with the GOP, I'm stepping out against the president and saying that he's wrong on A, B, and C. It's going to take a lot of numbers, too. See, this is what happened years ago, Shaggy, when George W. became president. So it was the first time in a long time you had a Republican president, House, and Senate. Everybody was aligned on the same thing. And as a talk radio host, I was very interested to listen to the people that are conservative, because now you got all the power. You got the president, House, and Senate, all conservatives, all Republicans. What happened? They started to eat their own. There was no more Democrats, no more liberals going after. So who you got? You got each other. So the only way it's going to happen to galvanize anything against Trump is for more Republicans to step aside in numbers and damn near in droves to make that happen.
You know, when we talk about a bunch of people trying to sidestep, it seems like all of these moves, as of lately, seems to be setting Donald Trump up on the trajectory for 2020. And the way that people have him set up, and this is the thing that I keep bringing Miller's name into it. Stephen Miller was instrumental in crafting the immigration agenda of candidate Trump back in 2015. When it comes to the xenophobic and racist messaging, that, once again, heavy-handedly, was the involvement of one Stephen Miller. Human lizard boy Stephen Miller actually went as far as crafting some of the president's public statements when it comes to racial tension or events in the United States that increase said racial tension, always ratcheting it up just left of white supremacy outright. But this week, from Representative Omar, we actually have a sitting member of the legislative branch calling a sitting member of the president's cabinet a white nationalist. And when we look at Stephen Miller's ideology, was Representative Omar's statement factually correct?
I would say so. When you talk about elitism, what Stephen Miller has tried to accomplish is the fact that you're taking it in the guise of privilege. And so people who are with money, who happen to be white, who could benefit from this, and you slip in the message behind all that with some form of white supremacy. Let's go back to the Ford situation with Charlottesville, Virginia, that tragedy. And again, the president coming forward, and you sit back and wonder, did the president mean this, or did the speechwriter, Stephen Miller, put it through the mouth of the president, saying that there was wrong on both sides? See, now we see the emergence of Stephen Miller, and go back and reaccount all these things Trump has done. Again, Trump is a very lazy man. So he has to get his bullet points from somewhere else. Now, the bullet points could come from Stephen Miller.
And so, this is the question then. Is Trump really a nationalist like he claimed, or was that scripted from Stephen Miller to be kind of a dog whistle coding to his white supremacist buddies?
I would probably say a little bit of both. I think that Trump has displayed deplorable behavior that fits in the guise of white supremacy. This elitism, it's my way, the highway, unfortunately going back to Grab by the P, that we saw, unfortunately, with Extra and all that type of stuff, going on, and Billy Bush lost his job. The thing about it is that you don't go around saying things like that unless you do things like that. So who's to say that he didn't grab ladies by the P prior to that comment? People say stuff from experience. So that goes back to anything when you look at the aspect of him being, again, in this world of Trumpism, the Trump University and the Trump Towers and everything else. All these yes people around you. Nobody never challenges you. Nobody ever says no. If they challenged Trump, I would assume they were fired. You're fired. That's where that crap came from, probably. So you fast forward that into the presidency, the same thing. But what's different is that everything you say now is fact-checked. We're in the fact-check era. You talk about this dad in Germany. Come to find out, the dad had no connection to Germany.
Dad was born in New York.
Thank you. But if you were back in Trump world and you said that, nobody would challenge you. And see, that is daunting, too. The behavior pattern that the president has fits the description at times of white supremacy.
Now, this is something I kind of want to ask about that whole thing. Could it possibly be that Trump's comments this week about where his father was born was actually another dog whistle to certain white supremacy groups? Because it makes no sense for a guy that's out of Yonkers to claim that he was from Dusseldorf or wherever. Is this kind of a whistleblowing to more white supremacists?
Achtung, baby. Sieg Heil. And that could be, again, historical content going back to Germany, going back to Hitler, the master race, blue eyes and blonde hair and everything else. It's all historical content. It's in code. If you knew your history, then once again, you see before dog whistles, of course. If you're playing to that base of operation, the people who are hardcore voters, no matter what you say and do, it's going to be okay. Why? Because they support you nonetheless.
Yeah, and when it comes to steadfast support, I just want to bring this up. Chris, do we remember all of the people in Trump's inner circle as a candidate?
I don't.
No, and the reason you don't is because none of them are around anymore. Most of them were indicted in the witch hunt that Mueller put on. But
oh, yeah.
Here's the thing. One of the most scary things to realize is that always in the shadows, around the corner, wherever he was standing, ever since the very beginning of the rise of Donald Trump, just off to the right of him, just into the shadows a little bit, a little darker, a little gloomier, has been Stephen Miller. Is there a reason that Trump, out of everybody he associates with, keeps Miller more so than anyone else he started with?
Miller was one point, had to take a back seat to a Kellyanne Conway, to even Steve Bannon. Remember that guy? You know, so he was the one. He was the first Trump whisperer for all these other people came into play before Sean Hannity, before Stephen Miller. So he took a way back seat of the people that were in front of him. So now the herd has been thinned. It's been spread out. So now here comes Stephen Miller.
Wow. And just like the ravenous predator that he is, nothing shall survive his teeth. Look, we'll get back to more gnashing of jaws in just a sec. Quick break. And we'll do more of the weekend review. It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show. Won't you join us?
This is 60 Second Civics from the Center for Civic Education. I'm Mark Gage. The chief executive officer of each state is the governor. Most governors serve 2 or 4 year terms and may be reelected for at least one additional term. Most states also have a lieutenant governor, whose role is much like the vice president of the United States. State administrative agencies collectively employ far more people than the national administrative bureaucracy. In 2013, for example, almost 3 million people worked for the U.S. government, while more than 19 million people worked for state and local governments. The judicial systems of each state consist of trial and appellate courts. Many states elect judges, although some states use an appointment process. Some courts are local and specialized, such as Justice of the Peace and Municipal Courts, with jurisdiction over matters such as traffic offenses. States also have a full range of trial and appellate courts. The State Court of Last Resort, usually called the State Supreme Court or the Court of Appeal, has the final say about the meaning of the state constitution. That's all for today's podcast, 60 Second Civics, where civic engagement only takes a minute.
Dig deeper. Remove the hype. Find the facts. It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network. Welcome back to it. From the, well, one of the islands in the Hawaiian archipelago, we welcome you back. If you've missed anything, first part of the show, who the heck I am, what we're doing here, well, you can find out all about that at our website, shaggyjenkins.com, or why not jump over on Spotify and iTunes and subscribe to us just by looking for The Shaggy Jenkins Show. Joining me from the windy city of Chicago is a guy that has been all over the map, and this week not only has been on the airwaves of WVON, but it has been asked by Dr. Ron to be one of the co-chairs of his cool show. Please welcome Information Headquarters, Chris Bass.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. I know Dr. Ron appreciate that. I'll give a quick plug that's very, very shameless to do right now. But Dr. Ron and myself, we started a like a meeting of the minds type show. So is Dr. Ron and Chris Bass every Thursdays at 3 p.m. Central Time on Facebook Live. You have to go to his Ask Dr. Ron page to be connected and join us in the chat. We're very unscripted. We don't know what the hell we're talking about, but we try to make it work.
You know, it's a lot like this show. Sometimes we have no idea what the hell we're talking about either, but we try.
We just start yapping and take it from there. That's all.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Ron is one of my favorite people online as of late because not even last week. It was this week. It wasn't even over the weekend. This week, he shared a video that I put back up on my timeline and once again tagged it with the louder for the boys in the back. It was a lesson from a black man to white America. And the thing is even though this message transpired way, way, way back in the 1960s civil rights movement, the funny thing that I've noticed about this, and one of the clever things about Dr. Ron, is he's realized that history is a cycle. And Chris, we are kind of back to the point of history this week of minority America coming up and saying, what gives, everybody else? Am I missing a point?
No, there's a retroactive behavior pattern happening. And let me say this up front, because I don't want anybody to get it twisted. Donald Trump comes off to me with very racist overtones of behavior pattern. He is not the master of racism, but he does continue to, you know, fan the flames. That's how I view him. So it's going to be here, whether he's in the office or not, about racism. It is what it is. But when you have people like him who continue to stoke the flames, let everybody know that, you know, make America great again could be code for make America white again and things of that nature. You have to be very, very careful of what's the code about, of what is it really saying. You can't come out with it. I mean, this situation, he's breaking the mold, turn the doors down when you call other countries, you know, S-holes and things of that nature. What I never thought I would hear on network television. That's why you see Never Say Never. But he has shown this, again, this nasty, deplorable behavior, not only as himself being a human being, but being the president and how the other countries view him. The man is vile. So yes, we're seeing a rebirth, unfortunately, and a recycle of supremacy right in your face. Yes, I got white privilege. So what? What are you going to do about it? And then the racism sparks, unfortunately, fly in the air.
You know, and it's moments like this that I just kind of wish that we were nothing more than a sports talk program, because, you know, this week also saw like a whole sports dynasty roll over. And much to the chagrin of everybody that's ever raised me, including my history teacher, my radio mentors and such, I don't want to be all seriousness into how crazy backwards United States is going as far as civil rights and this whole flashback to the 1960s instead. I just want to talk about basketball and one of my favorite players, Magic Johnson. So, I know that we don't typically do this, Chris, but Magic Johnson was a guy that I kind of grew up watching. He was so magical to me. Of course, during the time when he came out and said that he was HIV positive, the videos and stuff that he made with then-talk show host Arsenio Hall, bringing up awareness of HIV and AIDS and poor schools like my own through his video series, Magic Johnson has always been something that's been kind of a feel-good thing. So instead of just beating ourselves up with how terrible the country is going and how secretly one day we're going to have a new Martin Luther King and a new Malcolm X to straighten this whole crap out again, but before we get there, can we just talk a little bit about the moment that happened with Magic Johnson and the LA Lakers this week?
Absolutely, please.
Now, the reason I bring this up is it's not just because, I was a Lakers fan. I actually was only a Lakers fan up until Charlotte, the town that I was from, got our own team in the Charlotte Hornets. Go Muggsy Bogues. He was one of my favorite players when the starting lineup came out. However, Magic Johnson has captivated the imagination, not just of a nation, but when it comes to L.A., Chris, could we say that L.A., has a particular affinity for Irving Johnson?
Yes, because, you know, along with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, when he arrived on the scene as a rookie, 1979, 1980, for Michigan State winning the championship, you know, in men's college basketball, Magic had changed the game. along with Larry Bird and along with Michael Jordan, not with like along with you being from Chicago, my backup team was the Lakers until we got Jordan, and then I had to go back to the Bulls again. But and it really, I mean, that first Bulls championship with the Bulls versus the Lakers, my heart was torn. But I'm like, okay, Lakers, you got some chips already, you got some championships. Let us try to get this one. And they did, and we went off to a magnificent run from there. But Magic Johnson is somebody special because Magic, it's people that I know that know him. This is who you see on television. This ain't an act. This is the man. This is who he is. He was able to bounce back from that first thing nobody said about being HIV positive. Because I'll tell you something. I was working at a jazz station at the time. I was on my way to work, and I heard the news in my car. And I started to cry. Because, see, back then, it had the advancements of medicine that we have now. It was the gay man's disease, and then started to go into other communities outside of homosexuality. I said, damn, he's going to be dead in 2 years. That's what I thought, that a lot of us thought about that then. I'm so glad he's still with us now, and I know that the money for advanced medicine and taking the AIDS cocktail, things like that. So that's to be expected. But my point being is, someone like Magic is able to come along and give that special touch that he has his businesses, Magic Johnson Theaters, Starbucks, I go on other business. In fact, he has a piece now of the LA Dodgers. So it's a matter of spreading himself into other businesses where, look, you just want him on your team.
Yeah.
And this situation that happened recently, it's still amazing, but I'll let you set up the table for that. But it's just the fact that, take consideration, this man has been around the block more than once, not first time in the rodeo, so it had to be a very clean-cut decision what he did when he did.
Yeah, because this week, Magic Johnson, at the surprise of everybody, including all of the coaching staff, all of the players, the president of their franchise, the president of the NBA organization, he took everybody by surprise when, about 90 minutes ahead of one of their games, he got up there and said, I've been crying. This is a hard decision, but I'm stepping down as president. I'm stepping down as leader of this club. And everybody's jaw collectively dropped. Now, of course, between him and the owner of the Lakers, there is a lot of love there, as you can tell from her Twitter account, where she says, I love you. Thank you so much for all that you've done for the LA Lakers. But when we talk about somebody's social impact, Magic Johnson was somebody that went beyond the court as far as the fabric of American life that he was weaved. So when we have a guy like this, that's not just institutional to that franchise, institutional to that sport, but institutional for America actually coming to grips with something that we were highly uncomfortable talking about, HIV and AIDS. When you look at Magic Johnson's decision, he said, and I'm quoting him, I'm not happy. When you see somebody that's overcome so much say he's not happy, what do you think is going on in that organization?
Magic Johnson has always been that way. Before HIV positive, there's some, you go back to some Sports Illustrated articles where he mentioned about happiness back then. You know, he wanted to be happy back then because he had a strife with his first NBA coach of the Lakers. That was Paul Westhead at the time. And so there was some strife, and Dr. Jerry Buss, then the owner of the Lakers, got rid of the coach. And for a long time, Magic got flack from that. He was a coach killer, that he, you know, gotta be careful. You gotta be, have pins and needles around. He mentioned about happiness then. So that's been an ongoing trait of him. And fast forward to the organization, the Lakers we have right now, it has to be something that says, you know what, I'm out. One of the things I read about was the possibility they wanted him to fire Luke Walton as coach. And I even before that happened, I like Luke Walton as a coach. I think I got a raw deal because I'll just say this up front. LeBron James, and, you know, got up in there and didn't give him the respect that he deserves. Because let's go back in history, LeBron James and Luke Walton were drafted in the same draft year together. So he probably doesn't see him as a contemporary. He probably just sees him as some underling. And I hate to say, but that's how people rock and roll sometimes. And I don't think Luke Walton got the best he deserved. He was dealt with a hand of players he was trying to build up. But then we have LeBron coming in. And this is what, see, I'm a basketball fan, so I watch it all the time when I can. Before they were able to say the season is tanked, they had a game in New York against the Knicks. And there was our mind, okay, now they lose to the Knicks. The Knicks is a bad team, too. But still, here's LeBron James going to the end of the bench and associating with the team. So in body language, you're already saying, I give up. And not only are you the, you know, face of the franchise, you are the face of the NBA. Yeah. And you're behaving this way. Look, I can only imagine what Magic is going through in his mind, saying, you know what, the train stops here. I'm getting off. This could be one of many things. I think that has something to do with it.
You know, the thing that really gets me, though, is that it seems that when it comes to specifically people like a Magic Johnson, the world just doesn't want them to leave. And everybody is so super sad that he is stepping away from the LA Lakers program. But let's keep in mind, you don't see this guy out there playing games week after week after week anymore. If anything, you barely get his name on a press release ever so often when he has to talk about some great thing that the team is doing. And we know that presidents of basketball clubs are always victory intensified. In other words, if they don't get victory, their job is gone.
Right.
The thing about victory-centric kind of jobs is Johnson kind of had a marginal season with the Lakers. Not really a devastatingly bad one. It was 37-45, I think, was their record this year. That's not horrible. Take that from somebody that was a fan of the Charlotte Hornets in 1997. It's not that bad. Not that bad at all. But
yeah.
The thing is that when he made this announcement, it seemed like everybody felt like part of their childhood died. Are we losing one of the greatest generations of the NBA?
Yes and no. I'll probably say yes. But see, to be completely transparent with you, during the halfway mid part of the NBA season, the Lakers tried to get New Orleans player Anthony Davis. They tried to get him to come on board, and they failed miserably. As a matter of fact, the Lakers are going to offer the rest of their starting five. Exclude LeBron James. They're going to trade off the other four players and two more younger players and some draft picks to get this one player. Now, I like Anthony Davis, too. He's one of my top five players. But to get rid of pretty much half your bench. And you're starting four, damn near. So I thought it was a little outrageous just to get one player in return. But Magic and Rob Pelinka, who works organization alongside with them, they failed in getting that. So here you are, just take this caveat. You're a player, young player for the organization, for the Lakers. Well, you don't give two damns about me. You'll get rid of me. You know, I'm trying to be a part of this young organization. So they were upset, and the people in New Orleans were upset too, because the fellow players were like, look, you're going to leave us now? That whole thing fell apart. And you become Magic Johnson, the person who's questioned. Nobody is looking at your smile or your high five, your glad handing. You're in the eyes of the public, in the sports public in particular, because you failed a tremendous, could have been a blockbuster trade. So now you don't get the same accolades you used to. Now people look at you sideways. That can affect you. Magic likes to be the man walking into any room. Now that's questionable because of that debacle and other sort of inner workings. The one thing he did say in parting with the Lakers was backstabbing. And that word stood out tremendously out of other things he said. He's not accustomed to that type of backstabbing. So I'm very intrigued to find out more about why he left.
Oh, yeah, me too. And I mean, let's just go ahead and be honest here. Let's not weep too much for Magic Johnson. Let's not forget that his gender fluid son, EJ Johnson, is a multi-million dollar fashion designer, so daddy's going to retire just fine. Going to be okay. EJ got a little money tucked here and there. But one person that's not going to be okay, because their kids are not going to be able to go to college. Their kids are not going to be able to get a job or look at anybody as a straight face anymore. This week, we had people like, Laura Loughlin, Felicity Huffman. Felicity Huffman and other parents in the biggest college bribing scandal ever. We had them going to court this week and in a wave after wave announcing guilty verdicts. Chris, as long as we're switching gears from kind of a smart move on Johnson's part, can we talk about how dumb these parents are now that they got caught, or even before they got caught with this plan?
Sure. It's not too smart indeed. I mean, let's talk about Felicity Huffman, a fantastic actress. Yeah. I mean, I like all of her work. Her days going back to Desperate Housewives on ABC and then creating, you know, just a good character actress. And also married to another great actor in William H. Macy, who I also appreciate. Shameless is a fantastic show on Showtime. So this acting family is what I like to see. But now with Huffman, accused of paying a consultant $15,000 to a quote-unquote charitable organization to boost the daughter's SAT scores, you look, there was an old cartoon back in the day called Super Chicken. And I know it's strange, because I'm strange, but I always get type of sayings out of cartoons, stuff like that. For example, in the opening theme, there's a line that said, "You knew the job wasn't easy when you took it." And I was like, as silly as that may sound in the Super Chicken intro, that has merit. It has weight. You knew the job wasn't easy when you took it, when you created this $15,000 disguise. You knew it. But see, now you got caught. And I always say, are you sorry you got caught, or are you sorry in general? I think you're sorry you got caught.
I do, too, because this it does seem to be a trial of classism versus reality. And I mean, let's think about this in a nutshell. These parents this week not only have, well, doomed themselves to, okay, well, they're rich parents. Let's just be honest. A slap on the wrist and some community service, maybe sipping mimosas while fanning Paris Hilton. I don't know how celebrity community service works, but that's how I imagine. Anyway, besides their mild punishments, here's the thing. Chris, now all of the colleges that are involved in this scam are starting to look very closely at how these students got in, and they're getting rid of in a very systematic, straightforward, get the hell out, we don't want to see you more type of way, all the students that were involved with these parents. So knowing that a parent always wants what's best for their kids, what makes rich parents think they can just buy it all?
Because they can buy it all. I think it's as simple as that. I mean, when you're rich and, dare I say, wealthy, the average rules don't apply to you. You create your own rules. You know, for example, if you walk into a restaurant, you have money, you're very rich. Mr. Jenkins, I'm sorry, all of the tables are closed right now. And you pop out a $100 bill and say, a garçon. Now, me and my wife went to a nice little, you know, dinner and everything else. Oh, there's a table over to the left. Oh, wait right here. And you and Mrs. Jenkins will have a table. Mm-hmm. Why? Because money talks and BS runs a marathon.
Right. And I mean, there's another reason, too, is my wife hates it when people lie to her. So you call for a reservation. You tell us it's not there. He'll cut you, man. He'll cut you. But what is it?
Nice wife. Nothing wrong with Jenkins.
But the thing is, though, it's like the one thing that me and my wife have always talked about is when it comes to our kids and their education, are we going to plan to put back something? Are we going to start educating them early during their middle school years, all the way through their high school years, about vocational training versus traditional educational training? And the reasons that we have to do all of these things is because we are not rich, white, and affluent enough. Isn't that kind of strange that one side of our society gets to live by this completely blasé, I have money, therefore things kind of way, and the other side, like me and my wife and my kids, we kind of have to sit around and scrimp and save and hope and pray that the system is with enough integrity that we can get in on merit alone. Is it weird that this is the society we found ourselves?
Well, it's not that weird. It's been around since society started. I mean, let's go back to the days of England. You know, when you had kings and queens and, and then peasants, you know, living, you know, amongst the kingdom, outside the kingdom, and, you know, working for the kingdom and things like that. So it's always a classism since day one. If you have money, you have power and privilege. You come from wealthy, that means no matter who's born in succession of your family, everybody will be taken care of. Yeah. And they live by a certain set of different rules that apply to you and me. Had not been for the middle class, we would be poor.
True. And you know, there's one thing. There's a magazine that I used to read long time ago, and believe it or not, it was because it was at my workplace in the concession hall. We always carried a subscription to Jet and Ebony. Now today, the publisher, yesterday, the publisher basically announced, hey, we're out of money and we're stopping this publication. But Chris, that used to be the magazine you went to find out how much of misbehaving the white people were doing. Am I wrong?
No, it was a great history lesson. I was saying before my other show was, you know, the four main magazines I grew up in my household were Ebony, Jet, Time, and Newsweek. Those were the main four. And it was great to look at Ebony and Jet because there was somebody that looked like me in this publication. And my mom and dad would get Ebony Jr., which, you know, subscribed to children of color. And then we had coloring books like Brown Like Me and things like that, which were very prevalent. And also stories of a young African-American boy named Encyclopedia Brown, who was a sleuth and had his friends around him to solve crimes in the neighborhood and beyond. Mm-hmm. So when you see things like that, it just gives you, you know, you just race pride. And my grandparents had those same magazines. In fact, I remember one time as a kid going through some stuff upstairs in the attic and come across, before it was Jet, it was called Negro Digest. It was a smaller pamphlet, and we would read that everything in black and white, and it was just historical. So when Ebony started to progress itself and do Ebony and Jet, and being from Chicago and going downtown, seeing the Ebony Jet building was iconic. I had my first mentor talk radio, God rest his soul, named Ty Wansley, used to work for John Johnson. He was hired by John Johnson. In fact, my friend Ty Wansley and Tom Joyner were great friends. Tom Joyner got him the job to become news director at the radio station WJPC 950 AM.
It's a small world after all. Yeah, because I ended up working with Tom Joyner at WCHH in Charlotte, so small world. The thing is when it came to Jet had a very unique platform in the history of America. It was the magazine of inclusion. It was the first investigative magazine for minority people to actually go, oh my God, facts, information, and I can't believe the stuff that I'm learning here. But with them claiming bankruptcy now, I mean, Chris, Jet might as well be a Time magazine. It is that much of an institution in the United States. Is there a risk that we could be seen, at least in the form that it is now, Jet going away forever?
Unfortunately, Shaggy, yes. I've always said for years that we need, as black folk, to control our own narratives. We can't let anybody else tell our stories. But they do, and they're doing it currently. And so when it happens, they fade away. It's unfortunate. The black magazines you grew up are now gone. Essence, for example, Essence now owned by Time Warner. So you see these. One thing about society is that business-wise, you know, it's very capitalistic. And it would have been nice to have the threshold to pass generation. I did with my children, though, my wife and I did, to have them look at Ebony and Jet in the household. It was still around at that time. But at one point, it started to fade away. I'm surprised it not going to digital media. Yes, we do have an Ebony.com, but something else is missing. And I think what's missing is that having in your hand the magazine or periodical. That's the human connection, no offense to the internet, but that the fact that you held it in your hand and you were able to go through the pictures and read it and confer with your parents or grandparents. Now, on a personal note, as a kid and even as an adult, I look forward to opening the middle because you had the Jet Beauty of the Week. That was fantastic. I mean, I loved it. Man, I put it like this. They had staples in their navels, as my man Art said, not staple surgery, but staples in their navels, and you would check them out. And it was the photographer was a guy named, I want to say if I got it right, Lamont McLemore. Lamont McLemore was a former singer for the Fifth Dimension.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it is a small world. And, you know, this is the thing, because, I mean, we've only got like a minute and a half left of show. So I know we were supposed to talk about Jussie Smollett, but let's just make this a short story. He's not going to show up for the rest of Empire.
Nope, Lee Daniels is going to write him off in the next few episodes.
Yay! But getting back to Ebony here, this is the thing. It has been, for the longest time, the voice of people that did not have a voice in media. Chris, in 10 seconds or less, what is the next black publication?
Anybody wants to do it, but media-wise, it goes on in me, it goes on in her, or anybody else that grew up watching and listening to Ebony Jet Celebrity Showcase, or what is, or anything on those lines when it comes to print media, Ebony and Jet, it goes on in us. We continue it.
Yeah, and we end it, because that's the end of our show. Till next week, love you, mean it. Kate, and bye.